the Jerry McNamara coaches segment here on Big Board Sports every Tuesday at 10:30, and it is at 10:31 time check right now. We're live on location at another one of our great sponsors, the Bunker, and all their locations in the Capital Region. We're at Mohawk Harbor right next to Rivers Casino, hanging out until 1 o'clock today. G Mac, good morning, my friend. How are you?
I'm hoping you guys are getting a few golf swings in while you're out there.
Of course we are.
A couple breaks, yeah, in between breaks, yeah. Yeah, shank an iron or two off the simulator.
There you go.
Dude, G-Mac, you're spot on with that.
Yeah.
Try to hit the screen, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, usually, not the ceiling.
Are you in beautiful Burlington, Vermont right now?
Not yet, you know, not yet. Okay. We've got practice today. We'll hit the road after one last day of prep here before we hit the road.
Gotcha. What have you seen on tape from the Catamounts, who we're anxious to see, too, being in the America East Conference, and we'll call their games twice with you, Albany. What are you seeing on tape out of Vermont?
Pretty much the same thing we've seen for the last two decades. You know, these guys are just, you know, you guys are well aware with the America East of how dominant they've been, how consistent they've been. You know, when you look at personnel, you know, obviously you do a analytic breakdown and personnel breakdown before you get in kind of the nuts and bolts of operation in terms of how they play. And the thing that I really like right now, obviously, as a coach, is you want your point guard playing at a high level. And I think Sean Blake has taken a huge step for them in the last few games. He was terrific against Merrimack. He got preseason player of the year in T.J. Hurley. T.J. Long was unbelievable. I paid attention to their game against Brown after we played Brown, and T.J. Long goes for 40 or whatever it is. You know, Gus Yalden, who I'm really familiar with, he played his last year of AAU ball with the City Rocks. I've known him since he was a high school kid. He, you know, started his career at Wisconsin, then near at Seton Hall, and I think now has kind of found his, you know, his place. You know, and when he's on the court, he's got more usage percentage than just about anybody in the country, meaning they go through him. He touches the basketball a lot. He's going to have a high usage percentage because he's so good in the low post, but he can stretch and shoot threes. The kid Noah Barnett had his best game, I thought. I think he finished with 16 against Merrimack. So, you know, same as always. They've got really good players. They've got a really good coach. They're really consistent. You know, it's exciting for us because I haven't played at Vermont. You know, it was not to say strategic, but when we put our schedule together, you know, we already had St. Bonaventure on the schedule. You know, and we're going through our summertime of reaching out to people. I've been friends with Matt Langle for a long, long time. I've got great respect for what he's accomplished and what he's done in terms of, just like Coach Becker, in terms of consistency. So for us, we want to be one of the best teams. We want to be in the same category as these programs, and there's no better way to test yourself than to play against them. So we scheduled Colgate. We scheduled Vermont. The programs that we looked at that, you know, for me on the outside looking in, I've really appreciated and admired what those guys have accomplished. And for me as a coach, I want to compete against the best and guys that have done it. And this is a Vermont program, just like a Colgate program. They've been there, done that, and we're trying to get into the same category.
Some of those fans may remember you, G-Mac, from back in the day.
I hope not. I'm trying to forget them.
Do you remember your tournament game there in 05?
Oh boy!
Really? Is this where we're going with this?
You know,
I addressed this yesterday as well. Yeah, it's of all the games that I played in college, it's the one that I want back the most. You know, I kind of explained it in my media availability yesterday. You know, it's one thing. You know, my senior year, we got to the tournament. We lost to Texas A&M, and it was kind of like, you know, I was injured, and you didn't really know how far you could go. And my junior year, we were really good, like Final Four good. Akeem Warwick, Josh Pace, Craig Forth here in East Greenbush. You know, so for me, there's an elation in making an NCAA tournament, but there's an incredibly abrupt sadness when you lose. And for me, that really hit home against them because we had just won the Big East tournament. We really played poorly in that game, but the finality of playing with those three players, specifically for me, because I know from my overall career, I wouldn't have had the type of career I had if I didn't play with other great players and incredible teammates. And those three guys in particular, with being seniors, I was just kind of devastated for them that we knew we were good enough to be playing, hopefully, into the last rounds. And, you know, the abruptness of having that all end in one shot was kind of tough for us to take. But, you know, they had a really good team. They played well at the right time, and we didn't have our best performance. And that's what makes March so incredibly fun from the fan perspective, is anything can happen on one of those weekend games.
G-Mac, you mentioned a guy you're very familiar with in Gus Yaldin, obviously the big fella for Vermont, and, you know, a good rebounder, as well as, you know, T.J. Long, who you mentioned a little bit ago, too. Obviously, your group has been a really solid rebounding team to start here out of the gate in your first 10 games. How imperative is it going to be to control the glass, especially on the road where, like Roger said, they're going to pack them in, going to be a big crowd in Patrick Gymnasium here for you guys on the road?
Yeah, it's important. You know, you've got to – the thing that always has to travel with you is how you defend first and foremost. And
yeah,
you look at them and you do your breakdown and they're plus +5 on the glass. You know, Gus is, he's a handful, but so is Barnett. You know, Barnett's got 24 offensive rebounds on the season. He's got more offensive rebounds than defensive rebounds. His length and athleticism, which gains extra possessions. And the thing that I like about how he plays is he's not necessarily going to take a bad shot off after an offensive rebound. And that's, I think that's where sometimes statistically an offensive rebound doesn't show up in the stat sheet. If a guy gets an offensive rebound and takes a contested shot over two defenders and misses it, it's almost like a shot turnover, where these guys are very intelligent in terms of if they're not going to waste a possession. And that's where the glass becomes so imperative when you play a team like this, because of that, because of how intelligent they are. They're not going to waste a play. For us to compete, we've got to be able to defend and limit as many opportunities into one-shot possessions as we can. You know, you're not going to be perfect in that regard, but then you've got to hang your hat on how you defend after you give up something like that every now and then, too. So we've been pretty good. We've gone on the road at St. Bonaventure and held our own. We've got to be able to make sure that we control that side of the glass as well when we go on the road to Vermont.
I think you win this game tomorrow night. Would that go down as your best win of the season if you're able to win in Vermont?
Yeah, I don't really categorize them. I don't think. You know, I think each weekend kind of gives your program a different challenge. You know, I thought D.C. was very challenging in terms of three games in three straight days. Being shorthanded was a huge part of that. You know, you're down two starting centers, basically, and you have guys step up. But with how good they are at home, how good they are just in general as a team, it's a big challenge for us. There's challenges in coming back from D.C., opening up your MAC play. And you know, last year we beat Niagara in the same fashion in a big win and then lost to Canisius, and we didn't do that this year. So for me, it's not necessarily going in and being like, hey, this is the most important. The most important thing to me was, like when we played Colgate, of educating my players in terms of, hey, this is the, you know, this is a type of program that look at their success and we'll feature that. And it's the same thing we've done here with Vermont. We've educated them on, like, look at how good these guys have been over an extended period of time. Like, these are the type of programs that are sustainable. You're the type of group that can set the path of sustainability here. To be able to be those teams, you have to be able to beat those teams. So, for me, it's not necessarily about categorizing it as our best win. It's just, you know, mainly categorizing it as an opportunity for us to go in and compete against an incredible program.
Jerry McNamara with us, head coach, Siena men's basketball program. Every Tuesday we are sponsored by Northeastern Fine Jewelry. G-Mac, you had 9 days off. How healthy are you right now? And in particular, Goodrick, who obviously will play a big role if you're going to pull out a win tomorrow night.
Yeah. I hate it. It's a love-hate relationship with time off. You know, I loved it in the fact that I said it kind of right away after the opening weekend of the MAC that, you know, we needed a little bit of time off to rest a few guys and get them back right. You know, but at the same time, you're rolling and you've won 7 in a row. You want to play the next day and just kind of keep it moving because you feel like you're grooving. And so we'll see. Taz, he's good to go. You know, we'll still have him kind of feeling him out in terms of what type of pain tolerance he's got going. And I think Riley Mulvey's the one that we're kind of hoping on next in terms of availability. And he's been out since the St. Bonaventure game where he took a nasty elbow and had to go through the concussion protocol. And he's had two good practices. So, you know, we'll see today. Barring any setbacks, we're hoping. I'd still say he's questionable leading in tomorrow, but he'll probably make the trip with us. And based on how he feels today and tomorrow, we'll kind of go from there.
We'll keep it rolling, G-Mac, and if we don't talk to him, we might not with the time off and the holidays, but really happy holiday to you and and your family, and no matter what happens in Vermont, great start to the season. Can't wait to dive into conference play after the first of the year.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. Have a great holiday season, okay? Be safe.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, Jerry. It is the start of hour number two on Big Board Sports. The doors are now officially open for business on this Tuesday. We are at the bunker location, located in, there's a lot of bunkers. We're in Schenectady. We're right next to Rivers Casino. We're overlooking Mohawk Harbor on this Tuesday morning. Roger Weiland, Michael Johnson Jr., Vinny Fredericks back in our ESPN studios and joined by Terry Prim, the morning after his team set a record for 3-point shots made in one game last night in a lopsided win over Central Connecticut State. And that number that went in of 3-pointers was 14. And that was a program record. Terry, Coach Prim, how are you? Good morning. Happy holidays, my friend.
Hey, guys. How we doing? I'm doing awesome. Hope you are, too. Let me tell you, that bunker is a great location. I've been there a couple of times. It's awesome.
Yeah, it really is. All these bunkers have just one outdoes the other every time they build a new one. But we love the Schenectady location for sure, Coach. And you must have loved your team's performance last night. It was the final score, like 93-56. It was my lead story last night on the local news on WNYT. And must have been fun watching 14 threes go in.
Yeah, you know, and you played, I guess, seven games prior to the last two. And you kind of saw the numbers, and the thought was maybe this team can't score it. I've seen them score, and I think that's why I knew there was some type of adjustment I needed to make. Coach's staff's been great. Our young ladies have been great. They've worked hard. They ignored the record. They put in the extra work, and you see in the results, 14 made threes. I think eight different players made a three. So I'm really excited. I'm happy for them. And I think that's inspired them to keep going and keep working.
Terry, you read my mind there, or I think maybe I read yours, because my lead line last night, my lead graph at 11 p.m. when we led off our sports cast at about, I don't know, 11:25 last night, I said Terry Prim has always been believing that this team could score the basketball at a high level. And tonight, they proved it.
It was
something along those lines, because we've talked before about do you think is there enough offense here with this team? And then you see 14 threes go in, and you see, you know, like you said, on so many young ladies contributing on the offensive end. The answer to the question is yes.
Yes, sir. No, and, you know, 33-point quarter. 24, 21-point quarter, and honestly, we bring those turnovers down. We're focusing on that. And again, that's a lot of connectivity, you know, a lot of rushed reads, and we just getting them to trust each other, trust themselves, you know, just kind of had a mentality that, if I throw you the ball and you score, I scored, you know, and I'm feeling just as good. Even if I might get to the stats and only have 2 points, but if you score 10 and I gave you 8 of them, I feel like I scored 10. So just working on that mentality, but at the same time, just staying the course, learning the system, getting more comfortable with it, being confident in it.
I mean, the one player last night, Nicole Melius, she was the one that was real. I mean, Shiro got going early. Melius got going. Melius was 5 of 8 from 3-point range last night. Who is your best 3-point shooter on that team?
Yeah, I think she is. You know, especially when she's shooting it with confidence. She's not hesitating. She's kind of calibrating her reads in terms of, you know, how open she is or how open she's going to get. You know, when you're the best shooter, teams key in on you. So your open might be a little different than everybody else's, but you're still open. You know, you know, one of the greatest shooters to ever shoot it, I think Steph Curry. I mean, he needs like a hairpin, you know, and we're not that good, but she needs less space than most. And she was very aggressive with those eight threes. I thought we did a great job getting her the ball with some flow and some juice, and she trusted herself and it went in.
Coach, how excited are you to start conference play on Friday? You go on the road to Niagara at 6 p.m. Canisius coming up right after that on Sunday. But I'm assuming excited to get some conference play rolling around on Friday.
Yeah, fired up about it. We think we got a team that can fare well in the conference. You know, of course, the more connected they get, the better we're going to be. And we're really playing the long game, but these first two games, I think every game is going to have its own identity, and this one's going to be a lot of grit and toughness and physicality. You got Niagara, that Hurricane Havoc running around, and they foul so much that the officials can't call all of the fouls, you know. So they kind of play off of that, and then you got Canisius, who's got really good post player that they're going to throw the ball to a lot, and then play off of her with skips to the shooters. So every game's got its own identity, but we're fired up to go up to New York, and we're really confident about those two games.
Is Manhattan still winless on the season?
You know what? That's a good question. I saw that probably last week. I was a little surprised by that, you know. But
I'm looking at their record right now, Terry. It says in the standings that they are 0-9 on the season, 0-0-5 on the road, 0-3 at home.
And that's what you get with the MAC, because, you know, we end up playing a lot of those Ivy's Patriot League teams, and if you've had any movement on your roster, usually those teams don't, you know, for the academics and just the overall commitment with the Patriot that service schools. So you play those teams early, they got a little bit more chemistry and continuity, and those are going to be tough games for you. And so a lot of our MAC teams have been in those situations, and I think it's another reason why I was never panicking, you know, with 0-7, especially because I felt like we played four or five of those games, you know, pretty solid. But it's just a matter of getting the conference, feeling good about ourselves, understanding each other a little more. And so, you know, I'm really excited to get these two games started and get deep into the league.
Yeah, it's really hard to judge the win-loss record for some teams in the non-conference because of the difficulty of the schedule and, you know, new faces trying to get acclimated, and it really takes a little bit of time. Do you think the team to beat as you begin conference play will be Iona and Fairfield? Will they be the top two?
I would say Iona and Quinnipiac, and you got to give respect to Fairfield and Quinnipiac, and you got to give respect to Iona.
Okay.
I think you have to keep an eye on the Mount St. Mary's and even the Merrimacks. You know, they're usually pretty gritty, and you know, if you catch them on the wrong night, you'd have a problem. So, and you got some new faces in the league in terms of coaches and players, and you know, that kind of plays out how it does. But if I had to call it, you know, in my eyes, I want to beat them all, but I really want to beat Fairfield and Quinnipiac.
Well, your time will come, that is for sure. What a win last night. It treated your fans to a record-setting night with those 14-3. So enjoy that, and good luck to start conference play at the end of the week.
Thank you, guys. Thanks to the fans who hung in there with us. We're not done yet. I think we're going to have a strong finish. You guys take care.
Yeah, you too, coach. Thank you. That's Terry Prim. And, Manhattan is 0-9 to begin the season. So, hey, listen, Siena is 2-7 after that win last night.
Yeah, two in a row.
But that's a couple wins in a row. Maybe that gets them going. But, yeah, watching that game on ESPN Plus last night, they just started draining threes right at the beginning of the game, and it was contagious. And I meant to bring this up to Terry, but Gilderland-grad, Valencia, Fontenelle, Pawson.
Yeah.
Ended up with 9 points. She has had an injury-plagued career. She came out of Gilderland, highly touted. She's a News Channel 13 All-Star. She made our News Channel 13 All-Star basketball team. I remember the day she walked into our studios, I don't know, 5 years ago, because I think she's had a red shirt. She has had a number of injuries. I can't tell you. Every year, it seems like getting her on the floor and keeping her on the floor has been a problem. But they were able to get her back to playing this year, and she has definitely had some good games, and she's been a factor, and she made a three last night. She ended up with 9 points. She made a nice play in the first half, coming off a steal and a lay-in, but it's just nice to see the Gilderland grad finally healthy and being able to contribute to this year's Siena women's basketball team. In Schenectady. We're right next to Rivers Casino. Roger Weiland, Michael Johnson Jr., Benny Fredrickson talking Buffalo Bills football on the home of the Buffalo Bills. And let's reach out to our good friend Matt Perino for more on the state of the Bills now that Kansas City is officially out of the playoffs. Good morning, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. We're good. I'm good. Yeah. And, you know, we led today talking about Buffalo and their, you know, their win in New England, which, you know, defensively there's still some work to do, but when you got Josh Allen at quarterback, you figure it out. And now, you know, is this the year? We talk about that in the preseason, and then we say, well, but the stumbling block will be Kansas City. What's it mean, Matt, with no Chiefs in the playoff picture here?
It's complicated because I think on one hand you sit there and say, what are the real challenges to getting over the hump with the team that you've lost to four times out of the mix? But on the other side, you mentioned there's real question marks about this defense. The Bills before this weekend have struggled a little bit on the road, especially taking care of the ball. Now, we've known over the course of Sean McDermott's tenure that this is a different team in December. They're one of the winningest teams in December since he took over. They're outside of the Chiefs have been the best playoff team in the AFC over the course of the last five seasons too. So they have all of that going for them. But even after that win over the weekend, they're still likely going to have to play on the road to get to the Super Bowl. And so that to me is the area where I'm like, sure, I think they can win a road game or two. They've never won a road playoff game under Sean McDermott though, and that's part of it as well. But if I was projecting a Super Bowl run for the Bills, it comes down to the fact that they have the best player on the planet and I think definitively the best quarterback in the AFC playoffs. And that's going to give you a chance to win no matter who you're up against. I really think that they hope the Texans don't win that division somehow.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the one team you don't want to go on the road to play against because of that defense. I think if they were to land a matchup with the Texans and they end up being the 5 seed and the Texans are the 6 or 7, now they got to come to Orchard Park. That's a little bit of a different game.
What level of concern, Matt, and you cover this team day in, day out, what level of concern do you have for the Buffalo Bills defense? They seem to give up a lot of points and they seem to really struggle stopping the run. Is that going to be a problem in the postseason?
Stopping the run, yes, because I think that at this point this is who they are. Now, you know, there's areas where I think it can improve. Getting Ed Oliver back would mean a lot to this run defense. I think it'll allow them to play a lot of these guys back in spots where they like them more. You know, rookie T.J. Sanders was drafted to be a third down and long pass rusher on the interior. He's been playing out on the edge for the last 5 weeks because they just don't have the numbers of trustworthy guys. I mean, they get Bosa back last week. He made a pretty big impact. But outside him, Rousseau and Epinesa on the outside, they don't have a lot of depth. And then on the inside, Daquan Jones is 34 years old. He's been playing really well. He's looked like the player that he was a couple of years ago this season. They had a vintage performance from Matt Milano. And so I think guys are getting healthy. I think guys are that they relied on in years past have had some good performances over the last couple of weeks. It's just going to be about can they stay healthy, because I don't know if this defense is currently constructed can withstand another big time missing piece at any point in a playoff run. Like, you can withstand not having Oliver for a stretch, but when you lose Bosa and you lose Benford, it gets harder to manage that as you're going through this. So I think they are who they are against the run. They're a really good pass defense for the most part when healthy. And you just got to, you know, it's crazy. They're 4-0 in games this year when they've allowed 30 or more points. And I think that ignites Josh Allen in a way where he does kind of have to put the team on the back. But can he do that for three straight times in the playoffs? Remains to be seen.
Matt, you look at Josh Allen at his last two performances. I mean, the comeback win against Cincinnati at home, the snow, and the comeback win again in the snow on the road against New England, and specifically New England, right? I mean, after falling short the first go-around and just being down 24-7, being down double digits against Cincinnati, what did you make of Josh Allen just doing Josh Allen things, Matt, you know, helping, you know, lead his team to victory in two big come-from-behind wins these last 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think that Mike Vrabel actually said it best at the podium after the game. I mean, he looked like he had just seen a ghost or sick to his stomach or something. And he said, "What do you want to do? A 250-pound guy that can run over linebackers, that can throw on the run. That touchdown pass to Dawson Knox in the back of the end zone, where it looked like the Patriots had a good beat on him in the backfield. He goes through one gap and then just unleashes a laser beam." On the run, it's just like that. You just get used to the greatness, which is crazy to think about. And now, you know, you go back. I mentioned that Texans game, and you know, Allen was struggling for a stretch of like 3 weeks. The numbers weren't great. The run game wasn't really going. And now you advance a month and a half, and he's right back in the thick of the MVP conversation. And I don't know if he ever truly leaves it because of what people know he's capable of. But they're going to need that. And the way that this team is constructed, you know, that wide receiver position, the identity shift to the way that they run the ball, and then the defense that is very leaky against the run, they've almost constructed in a way that they need Josh Allen to be the apex version of himself more than they don't. And so that's, to me, just like going down the stretch here, there's a couple of winnable games. I don't think the Eagles are who the Eagles were. They're going to play the Jets and the Browns. So they're probably going to win the rest of their games. The Eagles are in Buffalo, and that will give them a chance to at least possibly win the division. The Patriots got the Jets and the Dolphins, and I don't know. Those are very winnable games too. So it's going to be a fun finish to the season, and then it's anybody's guess once the playoffs start.
So, Matt, you'd play in a perfect world. You get one playoff game at home and then the rest on the road for the Bills?
In a perfect world, yeah, I mean, you hope maybe one of those lower seeds win if you end up being one of the wild cards, because this is probably the weakest top end. I mean, if you look at the Patriots and all the questions about them coming off of this last week, you have the Broncos up there, the Jacksonville Jaguars up there. The Jags have played really well the last 5 weeks, but I still think there's questions there. And the big thing with Denver is just Bo Nix. He had a great game against the Packers, and maybe that's going to unlock him a little bit, and they become a really scary team if that's the case. But I want to see that a little bit more consistently. So if some of these higher seeds get knocked off and you're the Bills at the 5 seed and you take care of your business and one of the lower seeds is left at the AFC title game, what a story that would be if the Bills could somehow host the AFC title game in the last year of old Highmark Stadium. It's kind of a little bit of a sadness, right, that the Bills are not going to have any home playoff games this year, most likely, if things stay the way that they are and the higher seeds win. That would be kind of a cool, fun story.
Matt, how does this season end in terms of, like, you know, what everyone's – how you judge Buffalo if they don't get to the Super Bowl, if they get knocked out?
I guess it depends on when and how. I think that already – we're going to see a bit of a shift in how they address this roster in the offseason. I think Brandon Bean, you know, he doubled down on neglecting the wide receiver room, and he's taking a lot of heat locally, and I think rightfully so, for, you know, going into panic mode around the trade deadline when things weren't working and not being able to land a receiver, which he did a year ago in Amari Cooper. And I think a lot of people just wonder, would you have been better served to just address this in the offseason last year and get aggressive then, as opposed to getting all the way into the season when, even if you do make that trade for a Jalen Waddle or Rashid Shaheed or Chris Olave, now you're bringing them in the middle of a season when, you know, a lot of these guys, I think, would be helped out if they had an entire offseason and training camp to learn a system and build chemistry. So I just think that there's going to be an organizational reset if the Bills, and I say reset not in terms of like a cleaning house or anything like that, but just in a philosophical approach to building the roster and maybe spending a little bit more aggressive assets at premium positions around Josh Allen.
So with all that being said, Matt, you look at Sean McDermott and how successful he's been with this Bills team. Let's say, hypothetically, they lose. Obviously, don't want them to, but lose their first playoff game on the road in a couple weeks in January. Is he now on the hot seat, Sean McDermott? I mean, we've been talking about him being on the hot seat for a while, but does the heat turn up a notch if the Bills are a first-round exit and he still does not have a road playoff win under his resume?
Definitely turned up. I don't think that his seat is hot. I know that the national conversation has been about that, but I look at a guy in the other conference, Kyle Shanahan, who's had a similar run of sustained success. And listen, he's gone to a couple Super Bowls, and if that's the measuring stick that allows him to kind of remain in his spot and a couple of different iterations of that team, a couple of different quarterbacks, fine. But he hasn't won a Super Bowl. And I think it's really hard to find elite-tier coaches, one of the top two tiers. I mean, I put Sean McVay and Andy Reid in that top tier, and then probably a whole number of guys in that second tier that include Shanahan and McDermott. And the question that I have is, for Terry Pegula, who owns both teams in town, do you trust him as a Bills fan to move off of McDermott and find an upgrade? Because that's going to be a roll of the dice. I mean, we've seen it, you know, the Eagles landed on Sirianni and they ended up going back to a Super Bowl. But I could probably come up with four or five examples of what, you know, guys that have gotten fired and it's gotten worse. And I don't trust Terry, who's been cycling through head coaches on the hockey side to make that call. So I think you continue to run out the string with McDermott. I think he does a really good job of getting the best out of the rosters that he has. And I think that this roster does have to be better next year. They have to find a way. If they're not going to have a lot of extra money. They're paying Josh Allen a ton of money. But you got to improve some of these position groups and create a little bit more depth so that you're not as affected if you lose a guy like an Ed Oliver for a long stretch.
Matt Parrino, always a pleasure. Happy holidays to you, my friend. We appreciate all the contributions that you make on Big Board Sports throughout the course of the entire year, and I'm sure we'll be reaching out sooner than later as we move forward and get closer to the postseason.
Happy holidays to you and all your listeners. Take care, guys.
Take care. Thanks, Matt. Parrino and the Buffalo Bills are in Cleveland. Take on the Browns Sunday, 1 p.m.
I pencil that in as
CBS. Should be. This is hour number three. We're live on location at the bunker. We are in the Latham, or not the Latham. That is a location, but that's not where we're at. We're in Schenectady. We're right overlooking Mohawk Harbor, right next to Rivers Casino. And Roger Weiland, Michael Johnson Jr., Vinny Fredericks back in our ESPN studios and joined by the head coach of the RPI men's hockey team, Eric Lang, before the holiday approaches. Coach Lang, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Happy holidays over there. Hope you guys are well.
Yep. Good to hear from you. And I know you haven't played since the last we talked, but you've been on the road, right? I always like to hear about the recruiting process. It's not like you're sitting home with your feet propped up. What progress have you made with this team with a little time off in terms of playing games?
Yeah, it's actually a great time of year for not just myself, but our entire staff to get out and see some of these players that have A, committed, B, future prospects, and I was out in Western Canada for 7 days, and we've got two other staff members in Ontario. We've got one in Quebec. We're out in the USHL. Matthias Lang just came home from a great trip where they got the bronze medal for Team Austria in the World Juniors. So this is a time of year where we have to do some reflection on our first half, so we're going to do a deep dive into where things need to get better. So that's how we spend our early afternoons, and then at night we've got to focus on the future of RPI hockey.
Eric, do you sign players right now? Is this a signing period in college hockey?
Yeah. So, you know, we've got a couple signed, and, you know, we probably need five more forwards, a defenseman, something in that ballpark. And, the landscape is so has changed so significantly with Major Junior now being available to us. So players from the Western Hockey League, Ontario Hockey League, Quebec Major Junior, So just for our audience, so Sidney Crosby, who we were never able to recruit, now we can recruit, you know, the best of the best, and it'll really make college hockey outstanding, like the product inside of college hockey. I think 40% of the NHL is college hockey right now. That number is going to drastically increase over the next handful of years, and college hockey is going to be a great product.
How competitive is the recruiting process on your end? We talk a lot about college football and college basketball and the recruiting and NIL and everything else that's going on and how the landscape has changed. How is it for college hockey, Eric?
Yeah, I always say we're a few, you know, college hockey tends to be 4 or 5 years behind football and basketball in terms of, you know, but it's a transactional business right now. And the old, you know, if you used to be a great recruiter, go identify people and players and athletes that were a little bit under the radar, those days are long gone because of technology. Like I can watch any player from the Western Hockey League right from the comfort of my office. So there's, you know, the days of going in and getting these hidden gems, they're almost long gone. And then on the flip side of it, it's a transactional business. Guys just paying for players. And it's in our sport. It's not to the level and extent of basketball and football. But make no mistake about it, it's in our league. It's in our sport. And for us here at RPI, though, we can – there's plenty of players out there, so we can certainly win without it.
Talking with Eric Lang, RPI men's head hockey coach, with us every week in this time slot. All right, you said you'll take a deep dive into I guess the first portion of this season with the conference schedule, obviously the most important, and that's what you're going to really get into here after the holidays. But what do you think that deep dive, and maybe you haven't done it yet, but what do you think that deep dive is going to look like when you sit down with your coaching staff?
Yeah, for us right now, like, our special teams are down near the bottom of the country, and that has to drastically improve here in the second half for us. You know, I always say there's parallels. So where we are in the country in terms of how we're scoring, well, there's a parallel to the power play. And where we are in terms of our defending, there's a parallel to the penalty kill. So it's not like it's a huge outlier where we're top 10 in the country in scoring, but bottom 10 in our power play. The numbers are kind of similar here, but that's an area that for us, if we're going to win some more hockey games in the second half, that's got to become a competitive advantage for us. So we're just looking at all the metrics inside of that, and how are we entering the puck, how are we getting pucks back, are we shooting enough pucks, and on the other side, on the penalty kill, are we, you know, denying access to our blue line, are we getting pucks out when we should? And so, you know, I think second half here, as we feel like our 5-on-5 game in terms of how we want to play is not where it needs to be, but at least there's a structure in place that we feel confident in. I think it'll allow us to focus a little bit more on our specials here second half.
Yeah, do you think that deep dive will produce, like you said, maybe a couple of areas that you maybe are ahead of schedule on, that you are pleased with kind of where you're at right now given the circumstances?
Yeah, I mean, if we're just doing a comparison to last year, I mean, our program was, you know, we've lost 85% of our scoring from last year. That's, you know, there's no other program in the country that had to recover from that. But, you know, inside of that, we want to, you know, our shots against are cut down from a year ago. And some of our grade A's that were given up are way down in comparison to a year ago. So we're defending okay. We need to defend incredibly well for us to have success, but I do like some of our trends. All that being considered, it's a zero-sum business, right? You either win or lose on Fridays and Saturdays, so we want to make sure we check that box here in the second half.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on this show consistently every week. Hopefully some of your RPI faithful that follow your program that have time to listen to our show or when it's posted up on our website, get a chance to hear what you have to say about your program. And we look forward to doing this again once the new year is over and we crank up the ECAC schedule to a very high level.
Appreciate you guys. Happy holidays to everybody over there, and thanks for all your coverage and what you guys do for RPI hockey.
No question. Thank you, Eric. We appreciate you. Happy holidays to you and your family. That is Eric Lang, the RPI men's head hockey coach. I find when they discuss the recruiting process to be very interesting in how, you know, he goes about it and comparing it to the recruiting process in college basketball or college football. Yeah, he's out there doing exactly the same thing, maybe not to the degree with the NIL that others in yeah. basketball and football are involved with, but it's a process, and it's not an easy road to go out there and recruit, but I think all in all, I think Eric Lang coming in with a lot of new faces, and what do you say, 85% of his scoring from last year's team is gone, and you're trying to replace that. We knew there would be some work to do with this RPI hockey program.